Well, greetings out there to everybody listening. This is another A to A podcast. Today is Thursday, November the 10th. And I was thinking a couple of days ago, I was just going to have a regular podcast today because I knew it would be going so crazy. And then it dawned on me. I thought, no, I bet it'd be fun to talk to Andy Hoffman again. And I looked. And Andy, I don't know if you know this, but we haven't done one of these things for almost a year. So I thought, well, that's a done deal. And so I emailed Andy, and he graciously said, I'm there. Let's do it. And so here we are 2 days after this election. And with the way it's gone and where the markets have gone, I just couldn't even imagine a better A to A guest than Andy Hoffman. Andy, his official title is marketing director at the fantastic precious metals dealer Miles Franklin. I encourage everybody to visit Miles Franklin's site, not only to read Andy's blog and to listen to his audio blogs, but they're a reputable, wonderful company staffed with great people doing honest business. And so I encourage you to include Miles Franklin every time you're looking to buy yourself and add to some metal and add to your stack. But anyway, Andy, we might as well dive right in, my friend. Thank you for taking some time to join us today.
Yes, it's good to be, marshaling the superstars of the industry on perhaps one of its most important days. I got 2 hours of sleep on Monday night, 3 hours Tuesday night, and I think 4 hours last night. I just put out a 30-minute audio blog, 30 minutes to talk and probably 2 or 3 hours to script it, because to me, I have more to speak of than at any time that I can remember in all the, 13 or 14 years I've been writing about this topic. Because what I see ahead of me is, I thought this would be a turning point in history, this election. And already the financial markets are proving that, and I think we're going to see, we have yet to see even the political ramifications of all the things that are going to, fall in line in the coming months as a result.
It is truly historic. And again, for everybody listening, we use this GoToWebinar platform so that you can not only listen, but you can ask questions. Andy and I are going to talk here for a few minutes because we both got a lot on our minds. But then we'll turn to your questions. You have anything you want to ask Andy, you click the questions tab on your GoToWebinar control panel and you type it in. This gives you a chance to ask him questions directly and in real time. But Andy, before we get going, let's pick up where we are this morning. We've seen this massive move. I spoke about it yesterday in my podcast. I'm sure you probably did as well. Historic move, historic biggest one-day move in U.S. bond market and U.S. interest rates. And now stress is appearing because the dollar strength all across the emerging markets. We're beginning to see a repeat of what we saw earlier this year. I'm sure all of this has your attention. Let's run with it. What do you see right now as we look at it on November the 10th?
Okay, so many things to say. Let's just say this. Remember last August, the middle of August, 24 hours before the Chinese started their initial devaluation of the yuan, which was only 6% that they did, I wrote the upcoming cataclysmic financial big bang to end all big bangs. And I pretty much said that a significant devaluation of the yuan is the most is the worst imaginable scenario for the global economy. And sure enough, even that 6% decline caused a massive decline in the markets, which the PPTs of the world had to rescue. And then a few weeks later, I wrote, the only thing more cataclysmic than a significant yuan devaluation, meaning if the Fed raised rates. Sure enough, when they raised them a quarter point, we had another massive collapse in global commodity markets, currency markets, stocks, and in both cases, bonds surged because people assumed deflation, and that was the only thing that saved that in the PPT, the financial markets. Well, here we are today, and we had Trump win, and again, the initial reaction in the markets was kind of that Brexit times 10, where you have gold spike and markets fall. But then a funny thing happened. Bond yields started exploding higher and currencies started collapsing. And most importantly, the Chinese yuan, which no one's talking about, even though it free fell this morning through the floor that was set back in 2008 at 6.82 to the dollar. This is a major, major point. It's no coincidence, by the way, that this has started happening right after the IMF included the yuan into the strategic currency basket. They got what they wanted, and now they're letting it go. Big deal. This is a big deal, because if you look at your screens, everyone, you'll see that it's not just the Mexican peso, which is down 15% in Brexit-like fashion in the past 24 hours. It's all currencies. All emerging market currencies are down 5% or so today alone, and all the major currencies are falling as well, like the euro, and really across the board. So we're talking about the surging interest rates are causing, as they always do, the dollar to gain a bid, not because the dollar is stronger, because it's more liquid. People are terrified. So it's gaining a bid and all the currencies are falling. This is only going to exacerbate the six-quarter collapse of U.S. corporate earnings. It's going to exacerbate the insolvency of nations. And then there's that other thing that I've been talking about all year, which has been the greatest glut in the history of the global oil industry, which I know well because I was a oil analyst on Wall Street for 10 years. And when OPEC announced their deal a month ago, the minute it came out, I said it was a fraud. I said there's no way they'll ever do it. And sure enough, it's falling apart. And even though they're bidding up commodities today because Trump's going to do a $500 billion infrastructure deal that's as big or bigger than the New Deal in guns and butter, oil is collapsing. So you have the worst of all worlds. Everyone's expecting inflation in the bond and commodity in currency markets. And the most important commodity in the world, oil, is in free fall, which could start World War III in and of itself. The PPT's in there buying stocks, and they've got their, you know, and they got their propaganda saying, well, it's going to be good for stocks, it's inflation. But no, inflation is not good for stocks unless you're talking about hyperinflation. And that's going to be the route that we go if we have the fiscal stimulus plan. And remember, everyone's been talking about how fiscal stimulus is now going to replace monetary stimulus. Well, Trump is going to get it kicked off right here with the most insane combination of tax cuts and spending on infrastructure and the military, you know, and who knows what other unproductive things we're talking about here. So this is the best possible scenario for precious metals, which is why if you are not using this opportunity, while the entire world is watching their currencies collapse to buy it, I don't know. Oh, and by the way, Craig, what was that other piece of news? Do you recall that other piece of news that came out yesterday morning in the midst of all the election hype and everyone kind of forgot about it? India?
India, yes. Doing away with about half of their currency notes, that kind of stuff. All of a sudden, the very next day, they were going to no longer be legal tender.
Unbelievable. You know, we talked about when the economy was crashing here earlier this year, the Larry Summers of the world and the George Soroses have, you know, I call them Atlas Shrugged cartoon characters. We're talking about the cashless society. That was until the PPT saved the markets again. Well, guess what? They didn't just talk about it in India. This guy Narendra Modi, who came into office maybe a year or two ago as a supposed precious metal advocate, you know, and yet again, it's kind of like Trump saying he'll drain the swamp when he obviously won't do it. He came out here and he said that we're having, and these are the buzzwords, there's a lot of corruption and tax evasion, so we're getting rid of cash. Yes, the high denomination notes, they're getting rid of cash. And this isn't a society of people who hate fiat currency more than any. I call it the fiat apartheid over there in India, and they're the biggest gold buyers in the world. And by the way, the rupee is sitting right near its all-time low while the Reserve Bank of India is in the midst of lowering interest rates. So again, you know, we're talking about spurring massive demand for physical gold. And by the way, it's the Diwali Indian buying season right now. That's just in India. And that was before today when all the emerging market currencies, such as the rupee, started going in free fall. So again, you know, we're talking about, I have never seen anything like it. We're talking about, I thought there'd be a perfect storm of Brexit times 10 of demand for precious metals when Trump was announced. But I did not expect it to occur this way with interest rates. I mean, look, interest rates could have exploded with Hillary Clinton. I mean, she wants to be the ultimate socialist. She's got capital spending plans. But I think the realization that all these wild cards are coming into power around the world, who knows what they'll do? I'm going to build the military and build all the roads, like, and I'm going to cut taxes. And I think people realize that, you know, the velocity of money is about to increase in a big way, because the only way that Trump can fund this is going to be to issue massive amounts of bonds. And this, when everyone's selling, I mean, the Chinese are massively selling treasuries. Who do you think that was the big sell yesterday? So who's going to have to monetize it? The Federal Reserve. It's going to be hyperinflationary lunacy in the coming months and years. And as Craig and I were talking before the call, and again, I did an audio blog this morning. Everyone's got to listen. It's 30 minutes long. It's called Turning on Trump. I mean, and I was the biggest advocate of him getting elected, but now I'm talking about his economic policies. There probably is not a single person in America who has more leverage to low interest rates than Donald Trump. This is a man who's lobbied Ben Bernanke and Janet Yellen for ultra-low rates for years. This guy has an empire, and it's privately held, so we don't know what his balance sheet looks like. The self-professed debt king has highly leveraged, high-end properties. And if anyone has been watching the real estate markets, they know that the high-end real estate markets have been collapsing lately. And now that interest rates, just in what happened in the last day or two alone, are surging. I mean, we could have a situation where the president's empire could go bankrupt while he's the president if interest rates are not held down.
He could be the second U.S. president to go bankrupt. Didn't you?
Donald Trump is famous for corporate bankruptcies. He's famous for having too much debt. He's famous for his debt renegotiation. Remember, this was only 6 months ago. He said on CNBC, I'll renegotiate the U.S. debt, meaning he's going to default on it. And he's going to have to default on it. Most defaults, of course, occur by hyperinflation. It would be highly irregular throughout history for a country, let alone the leading superpower reserve currency to default. But that's what he's talking about. But we all know that ultimately we're going to be defaulting, most likely by hyperinflation. And all the other countries in the world, particularly these ones who are watching their currencies free fall as we speak, are going to do it long before the United States does.
And Andy, how about all this purported analysis in the last, well, any day, but particularly in the last 24 hours, that is all U.S.-centric, as if all the other countries in the world are just going to simply follow along and do whatever the U.S. wants them to do. You mentioned the Chinese selling their treasuries, and this, it can't be coincidence that the biggest move in the U.S. Treasury market ever happens the day after Trump is elected. You mentioned the yuan in a free fall and moving lower at the same rate as the 10-year treasury is moving lower. If the Chinese are acting independently and looking over the horizon and going, well, maybe this crazy American actually is going to do a trade war with us. Who knows what he's going to want? They start looking out for their own interests and start dumping treasuries to get dollars to then sell the dollars to try to help their own situation out, buy gold, do whatever they want. No one is looking at it from an international perspective. No one is analyzing how this is almost identical to what we saw back in January. Everybody just says, oh, yeah, well, look at how great this is. Trump's going to go build some new bridges. There's a lot more going on here than that.
Well, put it this way. In my Turning on Trump audio blog, and people who listen to me know, I've advocated more than anyone. In fact, I went to see him speak in Denver here last week. Him getting elected, not because I thought he was going to change the world, but because we, just like 8 years ago, we desperately had to get the neocons out before they started World War III. We had to get Hillary Clinton out before she turned our society into 1984, or a nuclear wasteland, one or the other.
Right.
But now that he's here, in turning against Trump, I'm going over his policies, starting with, first, this ridiculous, unbelievable new, I said it's a combination of the New Deal and guns and butter. And remember, guns and butter is what ended the gold standard. And
yep.
And the New Deal was the greatest spending program ever, which was after World War, after World War I. That's what he's proposing, cutting taxes and massively raising spending on unproductive things that have negative rates of return. So we're talking about massive inflation. This can't be done without massive debt issuance, and this is at a time when all of our competitors in the world are selling treasuries, so they're going to have to be monetized. And then the second thing, as you say, is these nationalist policies. Okay, first of all, the trend of anti-establishment elections around the world is going to go hyperbolic. First the Brexit, and now this, which I call Brexit times 10, which, by the way, Trump himself used in one of his speeches last week. So yeah. I take credit for that. But again, so you're going to have wild cards coming into office all over the place. Who knows what Marine Le Pen's going to do in France? Who knows what the new people are going to do in Italy, the five-star movement, when they get in, et cetera, et cetera. But more importantly, these nationalist policies, which I said, they sound good under the propaganda of America First. And yes, it's good that he has America's intentions, best interests first. But we are talking about trade wars. I mean, he actively has talked about, I want massive tariffs on the Mexicans and the Chinese. You have massive tariffs. What you do, first of all, is you crush the economy here because Americans have no money to buy things. That's what caused the Depression, the Smoot-Hawley and all these other tariffs. Because it kills the economy, it's not going to bring the jobs back. I mean, those jobs are long gone. The cost of labor in Mexico and China and many other places is much lower. The cost of building factories here and re-educating people and the time it would take, it's almost like getting rid of Obamacare. Sounds great on paper, but what are we going to do? Tell 5 million people, oh, guess what? You got no more health insurance. We'll have riots around the country. Most of the congressmen, whether it's Republican-controlled or not, are still controlled by special interests such as the healthcare industry. So none of these things are ever going to happen. In essence, what we're going to have is a much better leader, no doubt about that. But we're talking about turning back the clock into nationalist type of nationalist movements, nationalist industrial and policies that are only going to take a planet that's already in the midst of its worst economy ever, with its most debt spiraling upward ever and collapsing currencies, much worse.
And you mentioned Obamacare. If anybody wants to see that repealed, it's me, just because my health care premiums have quadrupled in the last 7 years. But it also takes a 60-vote supermajority in the Senate to make it happen. And as the last I looked, there are going to be at least 48 Democrats in the Senate. So again, it sounds good, but what exactly will have changed? And Andy, one more thing, this notion that we're going to lower all of the corporate taxes and all of these dollars that are held offshore are going to come rushing back in, and now we're going to pay taxes on it. Okay, that's nice, but how about all of these dollars that are going to come rushing back ashore that have effectively been quarantined overseas and in treasuries or whatever for the last how many decades? I mean, that's rampant. You talk about velocity. That's just a rampant extra supply of dollars that's going to be sloshing around.
Yeah. Again, you know, as I wrote today about, once you go down the rabbit hole of all these things, you can't go back. It's like, you know, fiat currency, it's a Ponzi scheme. You can't go back. You can't be like, well, we have a new president, so we'll pay down the debt. No. In fact, this president is going to make the debt go faster. It's not a coincidence that Bush doubled the debt and Obama doubled the debt. And right now that, you know, Trump's policies probably will double the debt also. And that's not even including what happens if interest rates rise materially, in which it could double in a freaking year because of between Operation Twist and the government only issuing short-term bonds, they are so heavily leveraged on a short-term basis to higher interest rates. And, of course, who's going to lose most of all based on the rise in interest rates? It's the Federal Reserve, the world's largest, most leveraged, highest duration hedge fund that there is. Right. But again, you know, Obamacare, you can't go back on Obamacare. It sounds great on paper. I mean, just think of how long it would take to get a bill that would be, that people would think would be worth voting on. Like you said, you need a supermajority. You also have all the congressmen are in bed together with the special interest. Trump may not be, although he may need to be if his real estate properties start collapsing. So that's not going back. And as far as lowering taxes, it's a pipe dream. They're going to be raising taxes. I mean, he's talking about the biggest fiscal stimulus program of all time, and for things that we don't need. We don't need a bigger army. We don't need more roads. They don't produce anything, so it's going to have to be more debt. So, again, lowering taxes when corporate tax receipts are already falling. That six straight quarters of falling receipts, and now with rising interest rates and a surging dollar, corporate receipts are gonna collapse even more. You can't be lowering taxes. It's kind of like Bush. Bush said, you know, we're lowering taxes. What did that do? Nothing. You can give us helicopter money. That doesn't work either. The problem is, as I wrote in the direst prediction of all 2 years ago, and that came from the great work of the Great Deformation from David Stockman. Look. Based on 4 decades of too much, and particularly the last, you know, 10 years or so, all that money printing and financial engineering, the largest component of which was caused by Bill Clinton repealing the Glass-Steagall Act, which allowed Wall Street to run hog wild and become so rich that they took over the government. All the financial engineering, all the money printing, all the predatory lending, all the goosing of stock markets and bond markets has created the greatest industrial oversupply in the history of mankind, which is why it's so comical when Trump says to the auto companies, yeah, I'll make tariffs so you can make the cars here. We don't need cars. General Motors just yesterday laid off 2,000 people because they have too many cars. Ford, Toyota, the CEOs in the last week said that sales have peaked. We have way too many inventories, higher than we've ever had before. So again, you know, you have all these cross currents of negativity going on, and really, you know, this Trump thing, it was just kind of the fuse that lit it all. I mean, frankly, the same exact thing could have happened today for Hillary. I think there's just been such a focus on supporting markets and keeping them stable in front of the election that people weren't even looking at the fact that the global economy is collapsing, that all these major central banks are in hyper-monetary mode right now. I mean, the Bank of Japan is almost at the point of giving up because everything is failing so badly. The Bank of China, I mean, the amount of credit they're issuing, it's putting us to shame. The ECB has had negative interest rates for several years. They're now monetizing junk bonds, stocks, I mean, corporate bonds, you name it. So, again, I think now that the election's over and the emphasis on supporting markets is dying down, or, I mean, it's vanishing quickly, I think everyone's seeing what's going on. And if you ask me, if I look at the stock market now, yeah, part of it is manipulation. But I think we're starting to get the first seeds of that hyperinflationary increase of money velocity thing. And initially it makes the stock market outperform in real terms, but eventually in nominal terms, people get destroyed. As for gold and silver, I mean, let's face it. Well, actually, silver is doing quite well today. But in gold's case, I mean, give me a break. They're trying to force it below the 200-day moving average. You know, it's barely below that. And then it's not going to work because right now this swarm of people around the world, from India to Mexico, Brazil, and all these other places where the currencies are collapsing, and everyone's going to sense inflation. I mean, my God, Stanley Druckenmiller, he's like, he sold all his gold today. He said, because I expect now that there's going to be this big surge of inflationary growth. And wait, you sold your gold because you expect inflation? And, you know, we've been talking about deflation for years. Well, guess what? Today was the spark that started inflationary fears. And anyone who thinks that gold and silver are not going to be the best performing assets during such an environment, I got a bridge to sell you in Brooklyn.
Yeah, if anything, I think we can all come up with all kinds of historical comparisons, maybe the late 70s, right? That's where we're headed. I don't know. But you look at all of the euphoria today that everyone, now we're making all these conclusions, jumping to all these conclusions based upon what's happened in the last 2 days. And based upon what people think Trump is and what he's going to do, man, I tell you, none of this changes my opinion. All of the machines moving the markets around and moving gold up and down, none of this changes my opinion. And I would suspect it hasn't changed yours either about just a gradual, steady accumulation of physical metal.
Well, I wish we were in the late 1970s. It's funny how people talk about how that was like the worst imaginable times. And, you know, maybe relative to history, it seemed that way. But yeah, 1970s, the United States was a stable country. I mean, we had just gotten off the gold standard. We had no debt. No one really had any debt.
Right.
The only real issue was, frankly, it was an oil embargo. There was political tensions with the Middle East at a time where there was a bit of an oil shortage. Otherwise, everything was great. And once that was settled a few years later, everything was even greater. That was until the credit card that was the United States started to get charged up because we had just gotten off the gold standard, and then we introduced this new level of problems that we're at right now that credit card has been charged up. So, again, I mean, there's no precedent in history. There's precedents in history on an individual nation basis, but never before has the entire world been on a fiat monetary standard. And, you know, we're that standard is on it's in its dying throes right now, and the reason you know is because debt is rising parabolically, economic growth is negative. I mean, any country that says they have growth, meaning they're underestimating inflation expectations, is lying. In fact, just based on today, if inflation expectations have ratcheted up dramatically right now, well, guess what? The GDP for this quarter is going to fall dramatically. So again, you know, if people are going to talk about interest rate rises back in the late 70s, yeah, you could raise interest rates. Why? We didn't have any debt.
Right.
So now that can raise interest rates. I mean, if the Fed raises it, first of all, the market just raised interest rates for the Fed. And I would anticipate if rates continue to rise or even stay around here, that markets are going to be in for a rude awakening, particularly currency and commodity markets by the time we get to December 14th. And at that point, the Fed is going to be crazy to consider raising rates because most of the rest of the world is going to be back in easing mode. That is, except for some of these third world countries whose currencies are literally collapsing.
Yeah. And my idea about the 70s is you saw gold go from a pegged, managed, manipulated 35 to what, 850 in seven years, only to be halted again, as you said, by sharply higher interest rates, which they don't have the luxury of doing this time. And so we shall see how, I just keep coming back to this point. I mean, this is, we are venturing into unknown of unknowns of unknown. And it's going to be a very wild ride.
I would say relative to the money supply that's out there, that $35 in 1975 or whatever it was, 1973 or 4, is cheap compared to where gold is today because there's been so much more money printed, not to mention the cost of producing gold is so much more than it was, not just because of inflation, but because, you know, we've reached peak gold. It's in, you know, you don't find the easy gold anymore. So I would say $1,200 gold today is a lot cheaper than $35 gold was back in 1970s.
And Andy, there was no paper or synthetic gold floating around either. I mean, the actual gold that was being priced back then was almost on a one-to-one basis, where now we have all these different claims. I don't know, what is it, 20-to-1, 100-to-1 of claims per ounce? That all shakes itself through the system too. We have no idea how. Everybody always asks me, "What's the right price when this all settles out?" Will you tell me what the denominator is first? Tell me how much gold there actually is, for all the claims on gold, then maybe we can start making some progress. But until we know how many claims there are, how many actual ounces there are for each claim, then no one can make a guess as to what the right price is.
Right. And of course, you know, the central banks that are like the Chinese that are selling all these treasuries, yes, part of it is to fund their own deficits, but they're not stupid. They see their currencies collapsing. Of course they're buying more gold. Yeah. Look, the Chinese tell you every month that they're buying gold. They tell you a lot less, but I think they made it quite clear a year ago when they first wildly underreported, but at least told you that they've increased their gold, and each month they say they're buying more. They're telling you, look, we're buying gold. The Russians tell you they're buying gold, and a lot of countries obviously aren't. But I can guarantee you, let's say you're the government of South Africa right now who sees your currency at an all-time low down to almost 5% today, you can bet that they're buying gold or not letting some of their mine gold that go out of the country. Yeah. Because they're not stupid. They know the history of money, and they know that they firsthand on the front lines right now are watching the devaluation of their currency go down. And let's face it, Donald Trump made the word rigged famous, which we've been talking about for years. But I think anyone who's in a position of power in the monetary world is well aware that the price of gold and silver are suppressed, and therefore it's probably a good time to buy it when your own currency is collapsing.
One last thing, Andy, and then we'll get to the questions that are piling up. News was breaking, or at least a rumor was breaking as we started this podcast, that Mr. Trump is actively considering Jamie Dimon himself for Treasury Secretary. I think a lot of folks, I mean, he never said, I mean, no, and I mean, but a lot of people just kind of came to the conclusion that somehow, you know, Trump was going to, that was going to, finally we're going to get some perp walks, you know, finally we're rid of Holder and Lynch, and so therefore now Trump, he's going to go after these banks. Man, this guy is tied at the hip. I mean, to the banks and to New York and to Wall Street. And what more? What could make that more clear that he would even consider a criminal like Jamie Dimon for Treasury Secretary?
Right.
Let's just leave it there, and then what else you might want to add, and then we'll get to the questions.
Right, and again, you know, it's like my good friend Mike Krieger at Liberty Blitzkrieg. He wrote today about, you know, Obama. There was such hope for him, and he immediately destroyed that hope when he hired all the same kind of.
Yep.
Insiders, you know, Larry Summers is his economic counsel, and, you know, those kind of people, and Ben, and what's his name, Tim Geithner, and, you know, so right away you see the type of people who are put in, what kind of presidency you're going to have, and in the case of Trump, it's a completely different thing, because he's not funded by Wall Street. He's in bed with Wall Street simply because he's a multi-billionaire who needs Wall Street to function well to maintain his empire. He's as highly leveraged as anyone out there. And, of course, as he says, I was the ultimate insider. So he knows all these people. Look, his campaign manager is from Goldman Sachs. And the other person that he said he's considering for Treasury Secretary is this guy. His name is Mnuchin from Goldman Sachs.
Yep.
So, yeah, there's no doubt that he wants people like that. In fact, you know, already he's talking about his best friend Chris Christie, who's like a monster. I mean, if that guy's put in his cabinet, then you can see already we're already sliding downhill. It's very optimistic to believe he's going to hire people like you and I. Like, let's get some really smart people who are idealistic. But when it comes down to it, you know, you're going to protect your own interests, and that's what we're going to see. If he does in fact put Jamie Dimon there, and by the way, people, if he does, that doesn't mean that I fear that gold and silver will be suppressed for another 4 years. It just means that it's status quo. I mean, he wasn't going to hire Andy Hoffman to be Treasury Secretary to come out and say that gold suppressed, we need to let the price go. It's just more of the same, and it just shows you that things are not going to change as far as the way the country is run. The only problem is it's going to rack up debt at an exponentially faster rate, and it's going to cause currencies around the world to collapse even further. So, yeah, that's what I have to add on that. And, you know, as far as perp walks, personally, I think he'd be crazy to prosecute the Clintons, because the last thing the country would need right now, can you imagine what would come out of that, and, you know, how it would tear the nation apart. So I think it probably in the best judgment, he probably would leave it alone. It would be great entertainment if he did, but I would be shocked to see perp walks from the whole Clinton campaign.
All right, let's dive right in. I've got one email question. Got some questions stacking up in queue. And again, anybody that wants to ask Andy a question, please type it in. You open up that questions tab on your GoToWebinar control panel. That's where you type it. It comes to me, and I relay it to Andy. Andy, this question that was emailed to me, this is from somebody that couldn't listen in, named Jay Quest. And this draws upon your experience as an energy analyst. It's a two-part question, I guess, in a way. It says, knowing Andy is well-versed in oil, gas, and energy sectors, I'd like to know how the oil price continues to have these endless ups and downs in price, which is supposedly being caused by storage facility fluctuations and Saudi jawboning, while there are still hundreds of full tankers anchored offshore at many ports all over the world. And then second, what do you see as future demand and price for oil?
Ah, good. A softball question, particularly because it's been one that I have probably talked about more than anyone, certainly in our community, because of my background in oil. I was an oil analyst for 10 years on Wall Street, including six at Salomon Smith Barney. I was in the institutional investor ranked sell-side analyst covering the oil field service companies. And by the way, you know, during that period, OPEC meetings were the equivalent to my life and career as what Fed meetings are today. Yeah. So trust me, you're not going to find someone who understands OPEC better than me. And, you know, to that matter, again, the day that OPEC made that ridiculous supposed agreement back in, what was it, August, where they said they're going to freeze production or cut production, read my article the very next day. It was called "Was Goebbels Right?" about how, you know, it was such a ridiculous lie, it's never going to happen. And sure enough, it's not going to happen. And look at oil's falling. To answer your question in short to the reader, there's two words that describe why the oil price has been going up and down the last year, even though if it's really just been trending, you know, between $40 and $50, it's called oil PPT. That's a term that I coined earlier this year. It couldn't be more obvious because, again, oil is unequivocally the biggest and most important industry in the entire world. There's far more revenues for corporations and governments in the oil business than anything else. There's far more tax revenues involved, and there's far more debt attached to it, particularly high-yield debt. There's far more high-yield debt in energy in the United States than everything else combined. Yep. It's that much out there. So look, you know, talking about a country like Saudi Arabia, which is desperately borrowing money because they have, between all their social programs, they need 100-something plus dollar oil, and they got 40 or 50, so they are doing anything. In fact, I'm trying to remember who I should give credit to for talking about how basically they've, in coordination obviously with Wall Street, they've just taken up the Fed game of jawboning. They've taken it to a new level. Anytime the price falls and they see, it's kind of like gold, they see the shorts having accumulated, then they come out and say, new rumors that there's going to be a production cut, kind of like when Deutsche Bank was at its lowest. There's a new rumor that there's going to be a Department of General, and then they run the stops, and, you know, and they get a couple of months of oil going up to 50 until reality settles in. Only this time, you know, it's kind of like the boy who cried wolf. They have put, just like the mass media, put all of their remaining political capital into Hillary Clinton winning and basically destroy themselves permanently when she lost. All OPEC has put its last remaining bolts, and it didn't have many bolts left, given that really Saudi Arabia is the only one that has any real excess production capacity to speak of anymore. They put all their remaining bullets in this. They were like, oh my God, the Algiers meeting in September, it's falling apart, and look, oil's down to $42. We got to do something. Let's just say we have a meeting up there. Say we're going to do a deal in November 30th when we officially meet. That'll get prices up, and hopefully we can get a deal cobbled together by then. But sure enough, it didn't take, you know, a day before Iran was arguing in Iraq, and the next thing you know, it's falling apart. So as far as I'm concerned, they have just expended their last bullet. And this time when oil prices fall, they're not going to come back because, as I've said, again, I've been watching the oil market my entire life. There is unquestionably, let alone considering that all these currencies are falling around the world and that we're in the worst economy of our lifetimes, this is unequivocally, quantifiably the biggest oil glut in the 100-year history of oil. So, you know, unless they can hyperinflate, and that doesn't count because in real terms you still lose money, I fully, 100% expect to see the lows of earlier this year below $30 a barrel seen at some point when this whole, you know, inflation, Trump is good for business thing subsides. And by the way, wasn't it just last week, in the last 2 weeks, where if Trump wins, it's going to be terrible for business, but if Hillary wins, it's going to be great. Again, it shows you how much manipulation is going on, how inefficient markets are, and how clueless the investment and media, you know, people are in general.
Andy, you snuck in a metaphor, though, that I think is appropriate. You said they spent their last bullet. Their last bullet may, in fact, actually be a bullet. We've been waiting for that for years, too.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, the Middle East has always been the global hotspot of war. It is right now. I mean, heck, we're fighting all these wars in the Middle East about what? I mean, why are we fighting against Russia and Syria? Why is ISIS around? Why is Al-Qaeda around? Because we started them. And here, you know, I mean, you wouldn't even need our presence here to start a world war in the Middle East when you have oil prices this low. I mean, these countries are all going bankrupt, and they all hate each other. And because we've started wars and destroyed Iraq and sanctioned Iran, and now the Iran, I also say it's kind of like an apartheid where a handful of people at the top like America and everyone else hates us, and now the handful of people at the top hate us too, because they're aligning with Russia and China. So, I mean, I think it's inevitable that something really wicked hits the Middle East, perhaps with Israel. But frankly, these guys hate each other so much right now, it's almost like they've temporarily forgotten how much they hate Israel.
Yeah, Saudi and Iran could go after each other.
You know, it's kind of like, what's the movie? Oh, yeah, in Jurassic Park. Remember at the end, you know, they go in at the very end to where the T-Rex statue, bones are, and the T-Rex it looks like they're about to get eaten by the T-Rex. But then the raptors come in and they start fighting each other, and it's like the people there, they're like the equivalent of the Jews. They're being left alone while the other dinosaurs just tear each other apart. And that's what Iran and Iraq and Saudi Arabia, that's what they're all like. And then you throw in the United States is there and Russia's there, and the next thing you know, Israel's just sitting there going, well, what about us? I thought you hated us.
I thought we were the problem. Yeah. All right. The first question that I had sent in is from Isaiah, who his simple question is, what's up with copper? But he wants to get your opinion on that. But I do want to point out, it's like all of a sudden, just the last 2 days, people have noticed this. Copper's up 14 days in a row. When it was 208 3 weeks ago, there were articles out there about how this is it. Copper's going into the ones. There's way more copper supply than there is demand. And now in the last 14 days, it's up 20%. So it's not like, there's just all of a sudden there's this inflation expectation that just hit 24 hours ago. This has been going on for 3 weeks. So I don't know what the hell it is. Maybe it's a big, massive short squeeze someplace. But Isaiah wants to know if you can shed any light on this, Andy.
Well, you know what? This is why great minds, meaning you and I, think alike, because what you just described it is exactly what's going on in my head, and it's exactly because I talked about it at length in my audio blog this morning about copper. Because again, like you said, it's easy to say, well, everyone's expecting Trump to do this huge thing and they need copper, but this was going on 2 or 3 weeks ago. In fact, I keep wanting to write about it, but I have so much to write about. I mean, zinc has been surging and copper is surging. At the same time, they're holding gold and silver down. It's like, well, first of all, if copper and zinc and all these base metals are surging, wouldn't silver go up too? I mean, it's the biggest industrial metal in the world, which just shows you how manipulated it is. But I mean, we're talking about really noticeable moves up, and it was really only the last day or two where copper caught up to what like zinc has been doing, and lead and nickel's up like 10% in the last 2 days. Yep. Nickel, which has been dead and buried for years. So is it inflation expectations? I mean, I looked at the copper inventories. I didn't look at all the other ones. Yes, they're going down, but they're not close to the their lows. So it's really hard to know what's going on. Remember, there's always been speculation out there that J.P. Morgan had cornered the market in copper. That's been out there for years. Don't know if it's true. Don't know what's going on. But look, you know, you look today, even when they're trying to smash gold and silver. Look, gold's only down $6 now. Silver's up 31 cents. So in a way, it's starting, you know, if you believe that there's inflation expectations, look, the NASDAQ is getting crushed today. Bonds are getting crushed. Oil's getting crushed. The Dow is going up, though. That's, you know, that's your standard mainstream inflation asset, according to the book. Silver's going up. Gold is obviously being held down because they don't want people to think it's inflation. But the fact that silver is going up tells me that, yeah, I mean, there's something changing in the way of inflation expectations overnight. It doesn't explain why copper rose so much in the last week or two. But then again, remember, interest rates have been rising in the last few weeks, and you can never say, well, what about gold and silver? Because gold and silver are a different animal. They're completely manipulated, particularly in front of this election. So my guess is that they would probably have been surging as well if it weren't for the hold them down and, you know, in front of the election. So I do think that, you know, what was a stream where the stream is moving very slowly, the inflation expectations rising in recent weeks, all of a sudden is a torrent. Now that Trump is here and the realization that the fiscal stimulus everyone's been talking about is here to stay.
You know, and I should add this too for everybody listening. Keep in mind that the price discovered on the COMEX for copper is at least somewhat rational, at least somewhat tied to reality, and that total COMEX open interest for copper is only about 15% of global mine supply, where in silver it's 10 times that. Okay, so there is maybe some linkage to the futures price to what's really going on in the supply and demand for copper. And maybe, Andy, I don't know, 3 weeks of this, and you mentioned the move in zinc completely reversing the losses of last year. Now at five-year highs, all these other base metals, again, maybe this all augurs to a move by China anticipating this election of Trump and a sea change and hostility and adversarial relationship with the U.S. and everything else. Maybe it is just a move to reposition dollars into any kind of hard asset you can get your hands on. It's impossible to tell. Again, I'm just speculating. Isaiah's quite sure what's up, and I don't think anybody knows.
Well, let's face it. Look, we, all of us, and again, it's a short period of time in nominal time, but it seems like forever, and certainly in the new normal, the way the markets have been since they were commandeered after the financial crisis, frankly, since you go back to the turn of the century when the tech bubble popped, and that was pretty much the peak of the fiat currency bubble. You know, we've just become accustomed to this. Yeah, bonds, there's always deflation, bonds always go up. Doesn't matter if gold's up or down, bonds always go up, and they can always, you can always save the markets by, lowering interest rates because bonds will always go up. But we, you, I, and others have said forever, of course it's unsustainable. It's been unsustainable forever. You know, you cannot continue to print money without expecting velocity at some point to pick up. Velocity doesn't mean, they're going to do productive projects. It means at some point people have fear. And as I've been pointing out for years now, currencies around the world have been crashing. People in America are so secular, they don't realize there's only 300 million of us. And there's 7 billion other people around the world who have watched their currencies crash in the last 2 or 3 years. The price of gold in almost every currency around the world is at or near an all-time high. And that includes our neighbors to the north. How about our neighbors to the south? Gold's up like 15% in pesos in the last 24 hours. Gold is almost at an all-time high in Australian dollars, Canadian dollars, Indian rupees, Japanese yen, the euro, the Great Britain pound. I mean, if you lived in any of these countries and you were a, quote, gold bug like us, you'd be thrilled because that would be the equivalent of gold being, 1,800 here. So again, people around the world are watching their currencies collapse right now because they have seen increases in inflation expectations in their countries. We, as the reserve currency issuer, have been able to stave it off for some time, but what do you know? You know, it's happening now. Interest rates are surging. I guarantee you the PPT, or I should say the Fed is the bond PPT, are in there right now trying to gobble up all the Chinese bonds that are being sold. But it's not just Chinese bonds that are being sold now. It's all these currencies. The Indians are probably selling their treasury bonds because, oh my God, the rupee's crashing today, and the Brazilians and all these guys. And again, it's kind of like the only reason that the election was won against all of that rigging was because it was just too many votes. Yeah. And when there's too many people selling treasury bonds or stocks or buying physical gold when there's not much physical gold around, you can't manipulate it forever. So, how are they going to get bonds down? Look, trust me, they want interest rates to be quelled. They want to be able to have the media say, it was no big deal, it was just a scare. But look at this. I mean, the treasury bond, it's getting crushed again today. We're talking about this is the biggest treasury plunge ever. And what if it continues to go? What are they going to do? They're going to have to do QE4. I mean, what are the choices they have? Because rising interest rates destroys everything, including the Trump empire.
Yeah. Andy, you're being extraordinarily generous with your time. We're actually more than 40 minutes into this, so I better keep moving.
I still got a voice after taping my audio blog for 40 minutes.
We're going to get you some tea and some Jack Daniels. All right, so this is a good segue into one of the remaining questions. It's from Carl, who just wants to explain in simplest terms why it is that precious metals will not continue to be suppressed for the foreseeable future, and when will it end, and how will it end? I think everybody knows I've described how I think it's going to end, but Andy, how do you think, or when will this end?
Oh, I'm sure you know my answer, and it goes back, just go to Bill Murphy's answer. It'll end when the physical supply runs out. And yep. Look, all the efforts that have been expended in the past 15 years to keep prices down, which they haven't been too successful in the big picture, they've run out of inventories. They've caused peak gold and silver. I mean, supply is definitely going down. It's not going to go up anytime soon. Of course, all those inventories are gone, and now we have record demand. It's like, we ran out of silver back in 2008 during the crisis. U.S. mint silver demand alone is three times what it was in 2008. Indian silver demand is at an all-time high. So, we're talking about a perfect storm just on supply, demand, and inventory factors. And now we're talking about a massive increase in global inflation expectations. And I mean, I can't emphasize enough, people, you know, you don't realize as Americans what it's like when your currency crashes. I mean, even if the dollar fell 5% against, say, the euro today, you probably wouldn't realize it because we don't buy that much stuff from Europe. But when you're living in all these countries around the world who buy all their stuff from everybody,
yeah.
I mean, if you live in Brazil right now, the Brazilian real is down 4% today. It's probably down 50 or 60% this year, and you wonder why they have mass poverty and they impeach the president. And by the way, their biggest exports, oil and iron ore, which have collapsed. So we're talking about you have depressions, you have hyperinflations, you have social unrest. That's what's going on around the world. And, you know, all it takes is something which is an innocuous sounding as political rhetoric as, I'm going to spend money and get jobs, for people to go, oh, my God, but that it clicks in everyone's head. The U.S. can't pay off this debt, especially Mr. Bond King. He was talking about renegotiating debt right now. So it's going to click at some point in the major Western nations that everything that's happening in these lesser nations in this fiat Ponzi scheme is going to move up the totem pole and happen in the top nations.
Yeah. Yep, absolutely right. And I don't know if this is one you're going to want to fiddle with or not, but I'll let you tell us one way or the other. This is from David. Just wants to know, going into 2017, if you have any price targets, where you think gold and silver are headed.
No, but you know, here's what I believe will happen in 2017 is that I think it will be the worst global economy of our lifetimes. And I think it was late 2014 when I wrote an article called The Worst Global Economy of Our Lifetimes, and thinking how much worse it's gotten since. And again, I said, you know, just the falling oil prices alone is enough to destroy everything, like a raging tsunami. And believe me, oil prices have nowhere to go. The only way oil prices can rebound here is a true hyperinflation, in which it'll be well known that the real losses are much bigger than the nominal gains.
Or a massive war in the Middle East.
Yes, so a war in the Middle East, which will prop up oil prices, but will reduce the prices of everything else. And what I think in 2017, and again, it's not just here. First of all, you can have Trump, who's going to be a complete wild card. Who knows what he'll get done or even be able to propose. And you're also going to have a series. You know, it started, you know, amazingly and ironically, because you know, it was the Greek oxy vote that got it started last year. It failed because the government said, oh, yeah, you want no austerity? Well, guess what? We're going to do it anyway because they're too weak of a country. Meanwhile, Greece is on the verge of their own Brexit. They are really falling apart right now, and there may not even be a troika to administer an austerity plan or a bailout in the coming months. So you have that coming. You have the Italian referendum, which is only 3 months from now, which is going to be, again, between Brexit and Trump. It's a done deal that it's going to fail, and Renzi, who's the pro-EU guy, is going to be out of office. And then, you know, Marine Le Pen in France, she may run unopposed because not only is Francois Hollande, who has the lowest approval rating at 4% in the history of France, he has that rating, he's being impeached as we speak, and he said, you know, he arrogantly said like a year or two ago, if the unemployment rate's above 10%, I won't even run for re-election. Well, guess that. It's 10.5%. So she may run unopposed, and she is the most – if you think that the Brexit people are, you know, anti-EU, she is the queen of Frexit. So you're going to see France leave. Italy's going to leave. In fact, the odds are that Italy will leave before anyone else. Spain has got Catalonia secession. That's 25%. That would be like if Texas and California seceded from the United States. That's going to happen next year. The German elections with the alternative for Deutsch. I mean, you're going to see all these things cause uncertainty at a time where the economy is falling apart and governments are monetizing and spending. I really believe the end game is coming. So what's my target price for gold and silver? A lot higher than it is today. How's that?
And again, and as people have heard me say, the negative rates, the dissolution perhaps of the euro, and it's the second largest currency in the world. All of this augurs toward physical gold, and it doesn't even take much, but the accumulation of physical gold that then eventually stops the music, breaks the system. It's not going to come from the COMEX, but just any unallocated account where somebody thinks they own gold and then they show up and they're told, yeah, sign this and we'll get it to you in 90 days. That's what stops the music, right, Andy?
That's right. And, you know, unlike paper assets, look, paper assets can fall of their own weight from hyperinflation, you know, if you hyperinflate the dilution, let's call it, for lack of a better way, but it takes a lot longer. I mean, you can take any paper asset, a mining share, an ETF, or anything, and you can create supply for a lot longer than people can buy it. But when it comes to the physical, I mean, there's no way of hiding the fact that there's a shortage of gold, just like there's no way, per the last question, there's no way of hiding the fact that there's endless amounts of cargo ships on the ocean holding oil looking for ports. At some point, you know, the rubber hits the road. And the other thing that I was just thinking of today, and, you know, people keep asking, well, is everything going to collapse when Trump gets inaugurated as opposed to today? And I'm going, well, it is pretty interesting that the biggest collapse in the stock market that we've seen really in decades was in the month or two after Obama was inaugurated. It's kind of like there's a transition period, like early January to March 2009 is when everything fell apart. So, again, you know, are the powers that be, you know, still there because they want to hold things together until Obama's gone? Who knows? But the point is, when he does get into office, I'm not saying that day, I'm saying there's going to be a major transition of power between potentially extremely opposing forces. And so, you know, there's the potential for a dramatic amount of volatility early next year, let alone if we get there before things really start getting crazy.
Getting back to the kind of theme of my post this morning and what we've already mentioned earlier, anybody that sits there and tells you they can tell you exactly what's going to happen based on what's happened in the last 36 hours is obviously just selling something. Last question, Andy. This comes from Gabe. Just wants to know, you know, all this talk that all of a sudden just been kind of forgotten in the last few days about the Fed rate hike that was apparently priced in, done deal, coming in December. Do you think instead we might see job owning in a different direction? More talk instead about negative rates and QE4 as ways to put the dollar back down and to tamp the move.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And again, remember, I've always said that the only thing the Fed cares about is the stock market. The only thing, except when you look at action like today, you go, well, they may, just like they had their dual mandate, and you know, they may have to change the dual mandate. Well, they may have to change, because again, they've been able to manipulate the stock market at a time where interest rates were generally trending down. But now that they're rising, first of all, a quarter point interest rate hike. We just had a quarter point interest rate hike in the last 24 hours.
Yeah.
And look at the havoc it's caused in the currency markets. Again, people are so fixated in the stock market, they don't realize what a devastating impact the fall in currencies just in the last 24 hours alone has had on the global economy. GDP expectations between the fall in the economic activity and the rise in inflation expectations have collapsed in the last 24 hours, and people don't even realize that because they sit there and go, oh, look, the Dow's at an all-time high. Yeah. Hey, the Venezuelan stock exchange was at an all-time high earlier this year. That's plus, they're manipulated by the PPT. So, again, you can't look at the stock market alone. You have to look at everything else. And, you know, far more important than the stock market are the bond, currency, and commodity markets. And in the commodity markets, oil trumps everything else, no pun intended, as far as the importance on the global economy. And mark my words, when Yellen said that lower oil prices is unequivocally good for the economy, that was probably the biggest lie that she ever made. And I really hope she doesn't actually believe that.
All right, my friend, this has been, I think anybody listening is just going, wow, this was really a lot of fun to listen to. We'll, of course, post recorded audio a little bit later today. But, you know, we have a tradition here. You may remember it's called the Final Four, just kind of four fun quickies on the way out. If you're ready, can I lay them on you?
Always.
Look, I don't know if you realize it. Hard to believe, but Thanksgiving is only 2 weeks away, Andy. I mean, is it even snowed where you live yet?
It's 80 degrees here. It really is, even for Colorado. I don't think it's rained in the last 4 months, and I'm going to go play soccer at lunch in my shorts and short sleeves.
Okay, well, it is going to be Thanksgiving in 2 weeks. So this is the Thanksgiving-themed Final Four. If you're ready, I'm going to hit you with them.
Yep.
All right, what time do you eat? You know, in the afternoon or more closer to evening?
Evening.
Yeah, that's what I like to do it too. All right, white meat or dark meat?
White.
Yeah, I know. My grandfather, he always used to like the neck. How about sweet potatoes? You like sweet potatoes?
There's a lot of other choices that I like more. Some people love them.
All right, fair enough. And at the end of the day, you taking a slice of apple or you taking a slice of pumpkin pie?
Neither. I hope these aren't boring answers. I eat a lot of stuffing, put it that way. That's my advice.
Yeah, there you go. Well, you know, when else are you going to get stuffing? It's not like you have it every other day. Yeah, you got to work on that stuff when you get it. Andy, tell everybody about Miles Franklin and why they should include your good firm in all of their purchasing activities.
Well, it's a well-timed question because, you know, aside from being around 27 years, A-plus Better Business Bureau rating, not a single registered complaint all that time, we have some incredible new product line offerings. We just, and you could read my article that I put out last week called Introducing the Most Unique Storage Offering in the Industry. We now have private safe deposit boxes for gold, platinum, palladium, and cash in Toronto and Vancouver. And also, we just initiated online purchasing this week. And by the way, if you go on our website, you'll see I did a podcast with our president and CEO and co-founder, I should say, Andy Checkman, about the state of the bullion market and all these new exciting product launches. My number, our number is 800-822-8080, and you can email me at ahoffman@milesfranklin.com.
And I would encourage everybody to keep them in mind. Great company, obviously great people. But if you do go there, make sure you tell them Turd sent you, because Andy sends me a little kamishki every time somebody buys something. So I'll take it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Andy, thank you, my friend. This has just been extraordinarily valuable. And I don't know how it got to be a year since we had you back. We're going to have to do this again relatively soon. Because it's going to, again, I just can't emphasize enough, anybody that thinks they can tell you exactly what's going to happen based on what's happened the last 36 hours is crazy. This is going to be an incredibly volatile time, and it's going to be amazing to watch it unfold. And we need your guidance and help and your opinions as we go, Andy. So please keep them coming.
Yep, we're all in this together.
That is for certain. Thank you, my friend. Have a great rest of your day.
You too.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll talk to you next week.